right, welcome to the State of Games. I'm Dice Hate Me.
Hey, I'm Fred McKenzie.
I'm Adam.
He's distracted. There's ducks outside.
Yeah.
I'm Get Louder.
I'm Puppy Shogun.
Tiffany, socially enough gamer.
And it's Geek Jock.
And this is episode 50, the giant-sized episode 50, otherwise known, as we like to call it, the one about Gen Con 2013.
Episode 50, no balloon drop.
Yeah, we should. Well, I'm sorry. We're in the basement of the hotel here in downtown Indianapolis, who does it's a very dry place, apparently, with Sunday, and we cannot find beer anywhere, which is probably the best for you out there listening to the podcast.
That's why all the bikers left today.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the bikers skipped town because they can't find beer anywhere.
It's a good hotel, too, the Residence Inn. We'll just put
We're going to put a little plug for the Marriott Residence Inn. It's about 3/4 of a mile from the convention center. It's not a bad walk. They've been very accommodating to us, and we appreciate that.
Then I'm going to plug the Fairfield Inn, which is 10 minutes south and south Indianapolis. Fantastic.
Fantastic. Drink.
And great location. So.
All right. So we have given our corporate sponsorship that they're getting no kind of remuneration for. We're going to jump right into it because we're going to try to do this as quickly as possible. We've got a huge round table here and people wanting to go and do, and some people having to hit the road. We'll take a little chance to talk about the games that we've seen. Gen Con was huge. It's always huge. Some of us, like Daryl, he had to work the Game Sleep booth 2 days out of the week. Mm-hmm. Some of us were just wandering around. I had tons of meetings with designers or podcast groups, things like that. So it's been a very busy Gen Con, a kind of tiring Gen Con, but there's been a lot of things to see. We did the Geek All-Stars preview before we came. Mm-hmm. And talked about some of the things that we would like to have seen there. Some of those things we accomplished and some of them we didn't. So we're just going to go around the table, talk about some of the games that we either bought or played or experienced that made an impression on us or were not quite living up to expectations. So let's start with, I'm going to put you on the spot, Fred.
All right.
What was your game of the con?
Brewcrafters.
Brewcrafters. Well, I like to hear that. All right, let's lead with that one. So what?
We're in the podcast, right?
Yeah, we're just in right there.
I played very few games, mostly prototypes. Only thing I really played that's in production is Trains and Agent Hunters.
Agent Hunters.
Yes.
And who's that by?
I think that's Mike Elliott.
Ah, okay. So why was Brewcrafters your game of the con?
Well, I didn't play many games this week.
Oh, yeah, the truth comes out. And that's it?
It's a solid game. It's tight.
Well, while we're talking about Brewcrafters, and not the toot Dice Hate Me games, or at all, but Ben Rossett was there, also demoed a couple of his other prototypes he's working on. Well, Adam, you were in that game of Brewcrafters, and you really liked it.
I did.
So what impressed you about Brewcrafters?
It seemed very polished. There was a lot of different strategies you could go with. There was a lot of both interaction and kind of doing your own thing, and anything with upgrades. I'm going to be a fan of.
Yeah, of course.
But it was just a good game. I mean, it took a lot of what is good in worker placement, and then it kind of fixed some of the problems that people have with worker placement. So it was good.
Well,
hit a lot of cylinders.
And it's about beer.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong with that. Well, as everyone out there knows, probably listening to the State of Games, Brewcrafters will be hitting Kickstarter in mid-October. We're going to shoot for October 16th, but we'll have more updates about that.
Every time I walk past the Brewcrafters, we were in that hall a lot, in Hall D, and we walked past, he did a bunch of demos. And
yeah, five.
He's a demo machine.
Yes, yeah. He is.
Everybody seemed to be pretty into it. I mean, everybody, you could tell body language when people are not having a good time.
Well, and it was also one that just drew random passersby, like, oh, crap, is that a game about beer? I'm in.
Yeah.
And there was one lady that was, like, jumping up and down, literally.
Yeah.
And she was so excited.
Well, it might have to do
beer.
With...
Yeah, oh, I remember her. She was doing the whole clap thing. Yeah. Oh, did you? Oh, yeah, I'd love to see that.
She came from she just finished a Confounded demo and walked over.
Well, that's what got her excited.
She did. She was like, oh, my God, that game was brilliant. This game has to be after
decent. Well, I think the big brewing thing.
Yeah.
People into.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Well, Ben built this huge fermentation tank, or mini fermentation tank. It's not huge, but to sit on the table with the logo on and everything, that drew a lot of attention. It was really cool.
Yeah. So you put a lot of this whole thing with brewing games.
Yeah, you don't think they have legs? No, they don't have legs.
Do you want to announce anything about a stretch goal? Not a stretch goal, about a level for that?
Oh no, not yet. We're gonna save that. It's gonna be a little bit of a surprise, okay. But you know, we may incorporate a giant fermentation tank into the actual leveling for the Kickstarter.
The game's gonna come in a fermentation tank?
No.
I have to add a new one to the FAQ now. Okay. No, we're not coming can. No, we're not coming to six packs. No, it will not come in a fermentation tank. All right. So, moving on. So we'll go around the table. Adam, what was your game of the con?
I think I only managed to play two finished games the entire con. That was Spirium and Trains.
Right.
Trains, I thought was a little underwhelming. I'm going to give it a couple more shots, but it really seemed like Dominion, except you throw cubes on a board. And Spirium was really interesting. I think we learned it a little too late in the evening to fully kind of process what was going on.
Someone was falling asleep during the rule explanation.
Shut up.
But that seems to have some potential, so I did pick that up today.
Oh, you got Spirium today?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. All right.
I did.
And then I also picked up, what was the mad scientist game called?
What's he doing in there?
No, that's just what we say when we have a two-room suite at the Residence Inn. What's he doing in there?
One-handed a moon.
One-handed a boom.
So while let's bring up Trains while you're bringing up Trains. Let's talk around the table. Who here got a chance to play Trains? I know I was in on that game. Fred, you were playing Trains.
Twice.
I played as well.
Yeah. Did you get a chance to? And TC? No trains.
No
trains. All right. So this side of the table, you guys take a break for a second. Well, Adam, you said thought it was all right. Now, you had the same opinion, right?
Yeah, and it's more because of the way I was thinking about it. Because I said it was good. It wouldn't be my game of the year for now, because I think Joel Edie said it's his game of the year so far. Now,
really? I mean, that still kind of shocks me.
Yeah. And he loved it, and he still, even after the con, he was saying how much he liked it. And I was looking at it more as a beginner deck builder, which, as Ricano, when I was on Ricano's show, the Cardboard Jungle, he was telling me that that's not really what AEG was going for. So when I don't think of it as a beginner deck builder, it kind of has more legs to me. And I mean, I do like it. I'd have to play it some more. I would say it's still probably top 10 of this year, and I'm glad I bought it. So I wouldn't say I wasn't disappointed. It's just that when you hear everybody that comes up to you for 2 days at a con, have you played Trains? Have you played it? It's awesome. You got to play it. It's awesome.
Live up to the hype, but the hype was way too high.
Right.
Well, and I think that had a lot to do. I mean, honestly, AAG is really good about the hype machine. They've done a great job of marketing, and they really got the word out about Trains. They built a lot of buzz with advanced playtests with people. You know, I mean, signing it and it coming out of Japan, it already had some good buzz going for it. But you're right, it had a lot of hype to it. So it's like, yes, it's good because it has a lot of hype because people are like, oh, I've got to get this, I got to buy this the first day. And they did. I mean, they sold out. So it has a double-edged sword. And one way, it gets into a lot of people's hands and they sell a lot of copies. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if people are like, when they walk away and they're a little underwhelmed because of it has such big hype, you know, it's like a blockbuster. You know, the first weekend it might do gangbuster numbers, but then everybody walks away going, meh, you know, what do you do with that?
It's if you even remotely like Dominion, you'll like.
Now, here's the caveat to that. I don't remotely like Dominion.
Okay.
And I liked Trains. I think I liked Trains better than the rest of us.
What does it for you that Dominion doesn't?
The fact that I really do like managing the board. I like the fact that there are multiple ways to try to, you know, hinder someone from trying to get more points by, you know, building your trains and stations on the board itself. It's got another level to think about. I actually like the theme because it actually has a theme. It's not just, you know, oh, well, let's sit around with I'm buying a village and now I'm going to purchase a feast and all this other stuff. I just don't get into that. But, like, Trains, and I thought they did a good job of incorporating the theme with what the card did. So, you know, it just... Yeah, it seemed cleaner to me. It seemed like a more polished game. It had more going on for it. It was more fulfilling to me. Now, I would agree with you that it's probably in my top 10 right now. I would not put it in my top 5, but I'm really glad that I bought it. I enjoyed it. I mean, I won both games that we played, which was awesome. I mean, 20% more.
Well,
yes, exactly.
And what's good to say about that is that they were close games, too.
They were close games. Yeah, absolutely.
I kind of like that about it.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, Fred, you got a copy of Trains.
I did get a copy, yes.
And you're happy that you got it?
I'm very happy, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I like it. It reminds me of my own game because it's using deck building to put pieces on the board.
Right. So. Yep, you're right. And your game is?
Princes of the Dragon.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
So,
So moving on to, let's go to Daryl. I know you didn't get a chance to play a lot of stuff because you were demoing at the Game Salute booth quite a bit. But
I just demoed Pixel Epic all the time because, honestly, that was the one game setup I knew how to play, and it was the one game I had no problem demoing because it's a good game.
And it's an easy sale, really.
Yeah, it is. It sells itself. And that's what brought so many people in. But out of that, because I already own that and that's already out, so I'm not going to say that's my favorite game of Gen Con, I think out of the two games, well, actually three, that I learned at Gen Con, I have to go with it's a little premature, but I'm going to go with Eldritch Horror.
Mm-hmm. I was hoping you might mention that. Because I'm jealous that you got to demo it, and I didn't. But anyway, I tried.
Yeah. And it's one of those, the demo experience is really good, and I can't tell if I think the game is good because the demo experience was so good.
And you demoed it with Corey Kansa.
And I demoed it with the designer. Or if it's because it is a good game. The one thing that irks me, and everyone I've mentioned that I demoed Eldritch Horror, they're like, so is it an Arkham Horror ripoff? And it's weird because no, because obviously Arkham Horror is also made by Fantasy Flight Games, so they're not going to rip their own game off. But the cover art is the Arkham Horror art, except being in a car shooting at tentacles. They're on top of a train shooting at tentacles.
You're right, yeah. Close. I'm not sure why they went with that similar art. But
Launius is not on this project. It's Corey and I forget the other gentleman.
Well, Launius is attached to the project.
But he's not labeled as a designer. Yes.
He's in a video, I guess.
It says inspired by by Richard Launius.
Right, okay.
It's really smooth, and some of the new mechanics in it just really makes sense, and it just seemed like you're not automatically having to go into gates. And gates only activate at certain times on the astrological clock that Corey built. And monsters, it's far more cooperative a game, because say if a monster takes four hit points to be destroyed, I can only hit it twice, comes around to you, Chris, on your turn, you can hit the other two times, now it's dead.
Yeah, when you told me that, I was like, that is a vast improvement over Arkham Horror. Although, I mean, Arkham Horror is going to be great. It's going to be interesting for us to test as soon as we get Eldritch Horror and be able to see how it compares fully to Arkham Horror. Because Arkham, the one thing that Arkham is in my top 10 of all time, is the monster system. It's just very brutal. It's easier for you to try to avoid monsters and run away from monsters, and it creates a monster problem because it starts to glut the board.
Correct.
To be able to have the system where you can, you know, combat the monster and leave damage on that, it actually helps a lot, because now you can start to clear some monsters and be able to move around the board without having to worry about dying instantly or having to go, you know, to the hospital and recuperate and lose a character, which usually puts you behind.
That, speaking of which, that is another cool thing that they added. If your character dies, he lays down on the board and you put a brain marker or a heart marker on him showing how he died, and you flip his character card over. If he died from going insane, you can still go to the corpse and loot certain items from him or get information from that. If he's had a critical injury, it's like you can do these items. So the character is still somewhat in play, even though no one's controlling him. It's like the game takes him over, but he's still helpful. So it's not just, waste of time. It's like, no, now that person can be helpful still.
And it also, doesn't it incorporate, like, madness cards or, like, you know,
Yeah, the Mythos cards are still in there. Still called a Mythos deck. And that still happens at the end of every round. I mean, there's no midnight clock, but that's Elder Sign.
Yeah.
There's still, I think there was seven decks. It was like six or seven decks, which is far less than Arkham Horror. But, I mean, everything seemed streamlined, and the decks were only for certain areas. So there were expeditions, there were cities, there were research, and, you know, if you did that certain thing, you'd grab a card from that deck. And they were split storyline cards. And that was it. It felt so much faster than doing a first round. Like, when you do a first turn round in Arkham Horror, it takes an hour, 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
This took 15 minutes to do one round.
See, that's good. To be able to streamline that and to build a system around that that's based upon and inspired a game by Arkham Horror. That's why I'm really looking forward to this game. Also, because it brings it out of the city of Arkham and brings it to the world, and you have some new things to explore. So I think the real challenge, again, with Fantasy Flight right now is going to be able to make it distinct from Arkham Horror.
Yeah.
And make sure that it's known as its own entity and not just kind of like either expansion or...
Well, the whole point of this one is you're solving mysteries behind whatever the ancient one is. So you have to solve three of the mysteries about him to figure out how to lock him away forever.
Well, that's cool.
So they need to push more of the solving mysteries part of it. Because there's no Elder Signs. You're not, you know, trying to seal anything.
Okay.
You're closing gates as you go. And, you know, obviously he has a countdown as well. So the more gates that are opened, it comes closer to him waking up. But you're trying to collect clues to do research to solve these three or four mysteries.
Okay.
And, I don't know, it was unique. And it still plays 2 to 4 hours, like Arkham Horror says. But it just seems like the rounds were a lot faster and a lot more interactive.
Less downtime.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so let's go on to Puppy Shogun. What was your game of the con?
Well, I think you already mentioned, I think my, I'll talk just for a second about the one that I think, the best one that I played, because I honestly, like everybody else, didn't get a chance to play too much, because as someone going to, if someone has to demo or do other things, you kind of get stuck and you can't do other things that you want to do. So
right.
I spent a lot of time just going around shaking hands and talking to people. So game-wise, I think Spyrim definitely the game that I played that I was surprised the most. And you already talked about it. But I really like how it's kind of Keyflower Light from the Kalis designer. Just with some sort of, it's not bidding, it's sort of like, if I go to some spot, then it makes two of the cards adjacent to me more expensive for someone else to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
And the cool thing about it is that you remove workers whenever you want, but that switches you into phase two, which means I then have to spend turns removing all my workers for the rest of the round. So that fluid... I get to choose, and then you get to press. It's kind of like press your luck Euro. My favorite parts were when you were kind of just waiting, and how long can I wait to build up the price of something? And then you were just like, all right, sweet, I take my guy off, and I get $5, because there's that double-edged sword. If you build up the price, someone can just remove their guy, and they get money. As opposed to
blocking off that card, and
they
still get a boon from it, which is actually cool because you're not totally blocking someone else. At least they're getting some resources and some money out of it.
Yeah, so I spent one of the turns towards the end of the game, I had finally gotten all the workers the turn before, and I spent the entire turn, I was just like, I'm just going to wait and see what everybody else does, and I just dropped guys places so that it wouldn't build up the prices too much, but I would always get like last pick of everything. So
right.
It was kind of fun to just like... manipulate that. But other than Spyrim, which you already talked about, I think the greatest experience I had playing a game was with Robinson Crusoe. And that was because that Chesiewicz.
Yes.
Yes. Awesome.
He's just really cool. That guy can just, like, when he describes how to play a game, like, you're just in the moment, and it's really awesome. And it, so it was a really good experience to get taught by the game designer and just sit there and play. And he kind of was just like, go, why are you guys so stupid? Why aren't you building things? What are you doing? Like, taunting us the entire time. And I'm sure it's awesome because this is like the last day of the convention, and he's playing this. And for anybody who doesn't know Robinson Crusoe, it's a cooperative game on a deserted island, and you're just kind of stranded there, and you have to explore... make new weapons and things. In each game, you have a different setup of the weapons and the pot, like the things that'll cook food, pots, and you can build a map. But it's kind of like a tech tree that is different each time, just based on which card you place. And it's nice enough that it gives you enough leeway so that the game can kind of remove some of those cards. Like, you actively have to as disasters occur. You're like, oh crap, you know, it's like. I don't know what that is thematically. It's not really a thematic. Like, everybody has some. All of a sudden, everyone has like a brain drain and can't think. But it, you know, is. But the game creates this like really cool experience.
Is it purely co-op, or is it one that where somebody wins?
It's pure co-op, and yeah, it because of that, it does suffer from like that alpha player kind of thing. Like, there is nothing. I mean, I don't really think there's anything that blocks that from happening. But you do have fun just. moving around, putting your guys, spending your time, and taking risks, which you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So the game's very story-based and fun. Not my type of game,
so
but
I would play it again for sure.
Is it out now, or is it coming out? Or?
It's out. They had copies.
They sold out Thursday.
First day. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's...
it's an $80 game.
Yeah, not very cool.
I mean, it's sold intense. Out as an $80 game. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, but it's... If you were looking for a game that was worth $80, this is everything in the box, and the experience that you get, totally worth the $80. But at the same time, it's not going to be for people who are, like, looking for... Like, I say, Spyrim's more my type, even though it's pretty dry. I wish it was a little like Robinson Crusoe, and I wish Robinson Crusoe was more like Spyrium.
So maybe if you combine the two.
Combine the two.
Into a
awesome.
Giant mutant game.
Robinson Spyrium.
You are not
yeah.
a gamer.
Well, so, yeah. let's take 1 second, though, because we did mention Spyrium, but we didn't really get into, because several of us got a chance to play. It was kind of late when we played our game, but halfway through, it actually started clicking. We got our second wind. It made sense. It didn't make sense to me at first until Adam said, think of the speaker stop. And anybody out there who has played speaker stop, mm-hmm. you know, you're waiting in line. You're trying to press your luck and say, like, well, I'm going to raise the price of this mm-hmm. and raise it to the spot where, oh, well, you're not going to buy this anymore, so you can't bid this. So jockeying for position was kind of cool. What is neat, though, is it adds into the element, well, if you do get outbid, so to speak, that there's more people there than you're willing to pay. When you pull your worker off, you do get money for that. And it has, of course, more currency. It's not as streamlined as Speaker Stot is.
Yeah, but I think that's why... I mean, if I... Honestly, to be honest, after playing it once, I like it better than Speaker Stot.
I like Speaker Stot better than Spyrium.
Yeah.
But I think Speaker Stot is one of Feld's best designs.
Well, I think it's very streamlined and it's
elegant.
Very, yeah, it's very elegant. Yeah. But I think the extra additions in this one make it more fun.
Fun, yeah. Define fun, TC.
I was surprised that Spyrium was more fun than I expected, even though it is like we were talking about. I'll just paste it on theme.
I didn't really mind the theme. I thought the theme was fine. I can't imagine any other theme, really. It doesn't really matter what the theme is. I mean, at that point, I mean, I hate to say that, being a theme person, but I didn't really mind the theme. I mean, yeah, okay, there's guys with goggles on cards. I mean, whatever. There's factories. I mean, it doesn't really matter. Well, I mean, who cares?
I don't care about theme.
Well, when it came to playing this game,
shows how good it is.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, if somebody who really cares about theme wants to play a game, it has fun.
The mechanics outweigh the theme in this one.
Absolutely. The mechanics and the interaction, and actually there was social interaction
in this
game.
Yeah, there was interaction in that game, which was sweet. I was like, wow, this is surprising because I didn't expect it to be like this.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so before we move on, we will just announce that Daryl Louder has left the building. They're going to a back-to-back showing of Superman 3D and Star Trek Into Darkness 3D. They do not love us enough to stick around. But anyway.
Or invite us,
yeah, seriously. What's with that?
Actually, well, I'd rather play games.
I would rather play games, too. I can watch the movies at home. So, now we're going to move on to Tiffany. What was your game of the con?
Well, again, I didn't play a ton of games, unfortunately. Even though I was just roaming the world, I still didn't play. But I played 2 Finnish games, Spyrium, which is really the more me game that I like. So I'd probably say that's the game of the con.
I thought it was American.
Finished.
Well, you're also on my deaf side, so that's...
Okay, yeah. But today we played Hot Rod Creeps, and I thought that was a blast. I think that's a lot of fun.
I 100% agree.
You 100%
agree. I won it twice, so
well,
I'm 20%.
There you go.
I'm just glad Daryl Ladder has left the building so that we don't have to have a downside to this conversation. I thought it was fast, and I was actually impressed that it was as fast as what it was.
Yeah.
So, we do have yet to see whether the Nitro cards are
way overpowered,
but
yeah.
At the same time.
Well, you guys used a lot of them, but I won every time. So.
Yeah, and you only used a couple in each game.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So you had controlled card play.
I think it's balanced.
I really do. I mean, I want to play it a lot more. I mean, honestly, I got a great deal on it with Cryptozoic. And here's a story about Hot Rod Creeps. I mentioned this on you know, Geek All-Stars. And I talked about Hot Rod Creeps last year about Gen Con. It, every time I passed the Cryptozoic booth, I would see Hot Rod Creeps set up, and I'm just like, I want to play that game. It looks awesome. It's a racing game, and it's based upon, you know, the old, there's an old 70s art style that was all, you know, like, you know, these big guys racing these tiny little hot rods, you know, and you used to be able to buy model kits that you could put them all together and paint them, Rat Fink and things like that. So the art style I always really loved, and the play style I wanted to find out. So we sat down, this is my unicorn of Gen Con, basically. So we finally got to sit down today and demo Hot Rod Creeps, and it was everything that I wanted it to be. So I'm glad that you mentioned Hot Rod Creeps, and I'm even glad that you meant you want it twice, because it shows...
There's
that,
a gender imbalance, apparently.
There is, apparently.
Gender.
It's
talk
heavily...
about the demoer, too.
Oh, the demoer. Oh, I wish I'd gotten his name. Nitro.
That guy was awesome.
He was great. I mean, I wish I'd gotten his name. We sat there for a while, and nobody was really paying attention, but because, you know, hey, it's Hot Rod Creeps, and probably like, well, we're not selling a ton of these. But anyway, Adam finally flagged somebody over and got, you know, Adamified somebody and said, hey, dude, get over here and show us how to play this game. So... one guy came over and he was totally into it. You know, he talked about, like, you know, how they like to play the game, and he was really exuberant. And every time he was like, "What do you want to do?"
He was kind of using the monster truck rally announcer voice.
Yeah, yeah, he was.
Nitro.
Nitro.
$5 a seat, but you only need the ads.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. You only need the ads. So anyway,
I was playing Two Towers on the other side of you guys playing that. So I'm sitting there trying to play my Corruption on here. Nitro Corruption.
Well, I mean, I went back to the booth, and I don't know if Cryptozoic would want me to announce this or not, but whatever. I went up, you know, it was about 3:45 when they're about to close the hall up, and I went up and I said, "Yes, ma'am, I would like to know if you would give me a deal on Hot Rod Creeps." And she goes, "Well," she thinks for 2 seconds, she goes, "How much would you pay for it?" And I was like, $30? She's like, yeah. She didn't even have to think about it. She's like, yeah. So I got it. Retails for $45. It's not $30. And
there's no secret that they do that sort of stuff at the
other
times.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So if there's that one game you're really on the edge about and it's not selling out, you wait till kind of the end and you come up and say, hey, can you cut me a deal? And most you know, booths will do that, especially Cryptozoic, which has a ton of products. So anyway, I thank Cryptozoic for doing that. It was a fun booth to be around. They had a lot of great games to demo.
And they had the Doom that came to Atlantic City.
They did have the Doom
out there.
They did. They already had a prototype of it sitting out, like a production prototype of it sitting out, which was unbelievable. They had just bought the thing 3 weeks ago or whatever. So,
well, I wonder how much of that was the prototype that the guys already had.
Oh yeah, possibly.
It seemed like.
Yeah, that's true. I guess they must have gone and wrangled that up. So it was just impressive.
New graphics on it, but it looked like a pretty high level prototype.
Yeah, they were never demoing it. They just kind of had it on display. At least I never saw anybody sitting there playing it.
Yeah, I never saw anybody sitting there. We walked past a few times.
Right. So it was just interesting to be able to see that. So Hot Rod Creeps for you, Tiffany?
I think so.
Can we write that down?
Okay.
Yeah. Cool.
Right. You can put that in the books. It's official. Maybe a little bit shameful. I don't know. It's like a perfect game to start the night off with and get everybody all pumped up and excited and making sound effects. And usually I hate racing games, so I was really surprised that I liked it. There's a ring of fire. There's ramps. I mean, what's not
a shark tank?
A shark tank.
Yes.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it plays in, what, 45 minutes?
Yeah, or less. Every 30.
We went for a beer run, we were back, and we had punched out all those gazillion pieces.
It has weird, clear racer car guys.
Those things look cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a plastic ice cube with labels on the outside.
Did you have to put the labels on yourself?
Make it sound.
Did you have to put the labels on? Yeah, I figured you probably did. All right, so Dan, what was your game of the con?
Well, I won't say my real game of the con, because I don't want to ruin your announcement, because ours is pretty much the same game.
Yeah.
But I'll have to say that what would be my game of the con... We saw, with less than an hour to go in the frickin' con, that they went and printed out, like today, it was either today or yesterday, they printed out the DC deck building game expansion. They just happened to print it out. And I didn't find out about it until I was sitting there demoing the Two Towers. The guy's like, yeah, we just happened to print out one. And I ran over there. I was like, I got to play this. And I was looking at the cards, you know, Shazam, Red Tornado, Hawkman, Booster Gold,
Batgirl,
Nightwing.
Right.
These were all... Starfire, these were all the new oversized hero cards. And I get a chance to read a whole lot, and I saw Larfleeze in there, and I can't remember who, and there's new art for the weakness cards, new art for the kick cards, and there's new art for, and of course there's new big villains. So it looked awesome. And I was, even some of the powers on some of the cars in the middle, I just kind of stood there. We stood there for a little while to try it, but it looked like there was a little bit of a line. We weren't going to be able to get on her together. And I was like, all right. But
yeah, had we found out earlier, oh, yeah, we would have been there just waiting for it.
Oh, yeah, I might have done that like 4 or 5 times if I would have known.
And I would have demanded to play Booster Gold. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and he's something like, I can't remember. It's something like for every, I think you get +1 power for every defense you play.
Oh, so that's cool. That's his tech, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. That was actually pretty cool. But you, like I said, you will say what my real one is. And I got to play some good games. I'd say the prototype, let's kind of give you the prototype of the con, or we want to do that later?
No, sure. I mean, we'll talk about prototypes we played. This is really the memorable experiences. Like, what is your, like, game of the con? Like?
My game of the con was yours.
Well, mine, okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, we could talk about other things we played later.
Okay,
you know, well, then. I'll tell you the prototype of later that I really
all right, well, we'll come right back to you, and I'll announce my game of the con. It's no surprise, and it was a surprise to me, actually. I had it on my list when we talked about it in Geek All-Stars, but it was kind of low down the list. I didn't know what to make of it. Went by Cryptozoic's booth, and we got a quick demo in of Gravwell, and this is by Corey Young. Really straightforward, elegant design. Elegant's going to be the new fantastic of this podcast, but it is. It's super elegant, and to talk about how Gravwell works is a little difficult to explain, but it's a simple mechanic. Basically, the theme is there are a bunch of spaceships that have gone through a singularity into another dimension, and they're trying to make it back through a warp gate to escape. Since they're in a gravity well, they're having to use the gravity that's outside of the singularity to escape. So, for instance, you all draft a total of 6 cards in the beginning, and they all have letters and numbers on them. And the letters are how they're played out, because you all play the cards simultaneously each turn. So the person who has an A versus a Z, the A will go first. And the numbers correspond to how they move. There are 3 different types of cards. One, the most prominent card is a gravity card, which actually draws you toward the closest point of gravity. So in the beginning of the game, you're starting out, there are 2 derelict spaceships that are lost in this warp. When you start the game, you play a gravity card, you're immediately drawn toward one of those derelict spaceships, because the point of gravity is going to be outside the singularity. Now, as the game progresses, you also have to deal with the other ships that the opponents are flying around in there, too. So you could be between a derelict spaceship and someone else's spaceship, but if their spaceship is closer to yours than the derelict spaceship is and you play a gravity card, you're going to be drawn backwards toward the singularity if they're behind you. So that's how a gravity card would work. There's also tractor beams, which actually draws everything in the entire warp closer to your ship, so everything comes a little bit closer to you. And there's also a repulsor beam that is the opposite of the gravity. It's going to push off against the point of gravity closest to you. And it's a little strange to hear when you describe it without seeing what the board looks like or kind of seeing how the cards interact with each other. But knowing when to play a certain card and trying to anticipate what your opponent's going to do, so that you got to think, well, there's a guy close to me, and he may play a gravity card and slingshot past me before I can play my gravity card that now is going to push me the opposite way because I'm closer to somebody else. I mean, it's a lot of jockeying for position. It's a lot of back-and-forth play. It's a really cool system that totally took me off guard. We played 2 rounds mm-hmm. of the game and bought it immediately. And I think 3 times since then, and or at least I have. And every single time, I've really loved playing the game. So,
I'm 2-0.
Huh?
I'm 2-0.
You're 2-0?
Yeah.
I won 1. Not yeah, I guess you weren't in that one, yeah. But I won 1 game. And but yeah, it's just fun.
Awesome. Yeah. It really is. Such a simple, awesome. And I'm going to put a little anecdote in here. I was talking to Corey Jones, and he was telling me, this is kind of another Cryptozoic fanboy story, but Corey was telling me a story about Corey Young last year at Gen Con. This time last year, Corey Young pitched them the game. It is now available at this Gen Con, and that shows you pretty cool thing about how Cryptozoic works.
Yeah, they got it all ready, and then within a year, they got it out and selling at Gen Con, and it sold really well. People were talking about it a lot. So
really? It sold well?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So yeah, because it's kind of one of those games that's got so many minimal components, and it kind of looks like in that box.
Yeah,
was it $30, something like that?
$30.
Yeah,
well, yeah. That's
it's a good price point.
I mean, I think the price point normally is going to be $35,
but for the con, it was right. $30. Yeah.
Yeah,
and that's a no-brainer buy for a game like that. Really, mm-hmm. honestly, I mean, there's not a ton in the box, but it looks beautiful. I mean, it's a great production.
For as easy as it is to teach, and as easy as it is really to pick up, it only takes you a second to overcome some of the confusion. It will be one of the first games I think I'll teach people when I get home.
Oh yeah, yeah, because it's just so easy to get to the table. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, you played it. TC, you played it. Tiffany, did you play it?
No.
Aww.
I know.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, it didn't work out.
Aww.
I'll catch it later.
I'm sure you
Fred loves it. So
yeah, exactly.
I'm gonna try it.
So. Yeah. Did you play Fred?
I did not, but I watched it being played, and I picked it up just by watching it. So
yeah, it's
easy to learn.
And another game where everybody we played with, because Matt Riddle really liked it.
Yeah.
I don't know if he ended up picking up. And the two, we had dinner with the guys from Snakes and Lattes, and they really loved it, too.
Colin and JP loved it. Absolutely. In the first round, in the middle of the first round, JP's like, I love this game. I want this game. Yeah, I mean, that's a great sign
I think,
right there.
I think Corey was talking about how people would pick it up. Like, you would, if you explain the game for, 2 minutes, you would know if you want to play the game. Like, from your explanation right there, you're going to know kind of if you want to play this game or not. Because it's all simultaneous play. And, yeah, there's going to be chaotic moments.
Mm-hmm.
But there are definitely, and that's the plus to it, is there are definitely strategically better choices for your hand.
Yes.
Like, you can definitely 100% know that this is going to happen. Like, because you know what the draft was, and you know what you have in your hand. So there are some times you will play a card, and you will 100% know that you are going forward or backwards, and know the result of what that's going to happen.
Right.
But there are some times where...
I think that's even more rare than... I mean, there's always that chance, because you're... The two cool things of the game is the draft is so much fun, because drafting is just fun.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
You only know half the cards, and there's a card underneath, and that's cool. But like you said, the playing the other people, you're playing, like, what do I think? You know, it's almost like a bluffing part. What do I think, you know, TC is going to put down? Like you say, there's very rare. The only time I think you ever really know
what's
going to
happen. There's certain parts where it is like, chaos. Like, you do play a card, and you're just like, I have no clue how this is going to come out. Because it's right in the middle of the round, and you're, like, third card in, and you're like... I want to go forward, maybe, but you're playing like a four. But here's the thing
about that. It's like, okay, I think TC is going to play this, which will probably move him up closer to me, so I better either go first or make sure I go last. So I'm going to play a card later in the alphabet, which means it triggers later, because I know you're probably going to propel ahead of me this round, so then I'm going to go forward. So that's where the deduction comes in.
It definitely has it. I mean, that's why I was saying I like the fact that it has 100% strategic element at certain points.
Right.
So that you know for a fact, like, if you have A, you're like, I'm going forward one, when's the best time to play it?
Right.
And when you have the high card, when is the best time I play this?
You just got to be careful with, not you, but like the word chaos can turn people
off. Well, I know. But you got to know that there are times where...
Well, there are times where your plan doesn't work out.
You'll play a card, and then someone with a tractor beam just moves everybody, and they all flip, and you're like...
What just happened?
What just happened?
There's always going to be that point where you put a card down, and you're like, I have no idea what's going to happen when I turn this
card.
Oh, yeah.
Which,
and that's the fun. Yeah.
I'm not saying... But that's not a... knock on it. I'm just saying it's not... You're going to have...
Adam,
what
did you think?
I didn't play.
Oh, I thought you played a game. Oh, you didn't get a chance to play. I think you'll really like it. Yeah. I mean, the fact of it is like, I'm going to put the bow on it right here that, honestly, it is an abstract. But the theme fits it really well, and I don't normally like abstracts. And, again, I had a blast with it.
Is it in the running?
It is in the running. It is in the running for Dice Haven Game of the Year. I don't know that I'm not going to say that it's 100% the forerunner, but it is in my list for consideration for the end of the year. It's a fantastic game. I would have no problem right now putting my seal of approval on the game, and you will enjoy it. There we go. All right, so let's move on. So let's talk about anything else that we played at the con. I'm gonna list out things that we haven't mentioned so far, and I'm just going to list them, and then we can go back and talk about what they are. Some of us got a chance to play Pay Dirt from Tori Neiman.
Yep.
This is Crash Games. We also played Fantasy Frontier from Gameland Games. Lost Legends. Dan, you demoed Two Towers. We also played Jason Tagmeier's Maximal Throwdown, which was... We need to talk about that here in a second, because that was a very special session at Gen Con. Ascension, you were in the Ascension tournament, did really well, Dan. We had the X-Wing Trench Run from Daryl, who's not here to talk about it, but it was an awesome map that they had set up. Matt Riddle and Ben Pinchback showed me a couple of their games, one of which I really, really like, and we'll talk about that later. We played Swingin' Job Cat Voodoo Lounge, which everyone out there knows how I feel about that game, and I will just go ahead and say that I still feel that way about it, because I'm still really good at it, so
yeah,
I love it. Bell of the Ball, of course. I demoed that for several people. People were coming up to me, really wanting to see the game. Everybody's responded really well to it in art.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's crazy how good that game looks. Yeah, Jackie's just amazing on that art for that. Daryl, who's not here to talk about, but he did tons of Compounded, and people were really excited about that. Fred demoed Monsters and Maidens. We'll come back and talk about that in a second. Robinson Crusoe, we mentioned Rite of Passage, which was a game that Matt Loomis showed me. It's in advanced prototype form right now, and it was really good. You guys played Frog Flip, and I just wanted to mention that we also saw a demo, but we didn't get a chance to play it, but Rampage.
Oh, so freaking
Rampage is going to sell so many copies.
I pre-ordered it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When is it going to be here? Do you know?
I don't know.
After Essen.
Essen, it's released at Essen. I cannot wait for that game. It looks, I mean, they had giant Rampage at the Asmodee booth, and it's just, I mean, anybody who doesn't know what it is, it's monsters terrorizing a city, but it's a dexterity game. You're flicking and knocking over buildings, and you can blow on buildings or drop your monster on a building like he's crushing the building, and little meeples spill out, and then you eat them. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's going to be incredible.
And the giant one was so cool to watch.
Oh, the giant one was fantastic. So, Fred,
yes.
Let's talk about Monsters and Maidens.
Okay.
So how'd that go?
I think everybody enjoyed it.
You think everybody enjoyed it?
They may have been drunk.
come on.
I enjoyed it. I really do enjoy Monsters and Maidens.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a lot of fun. It's simple to learn, simple to play. Over quick, and it is what it's designed for. I mean, it's a fun little, and it's got a little social element. It's almost perfect for a bar scene, the way we were even playing it. I mean, it was good. It, of course, not for everyone. I mean, I'm sure Adam.
Oh, I enjoyed it. I mean, it's a light, quick dice game. It's not going to melt your brain, but you can be killing a brain with a drink while you play it.
I can't complain about that. I don't want to get. I don't want to burn any bridges, but I think it's better than zombie dice.
Well, you're not going to burn any bridges with that. I mean, I don't think Steve. Well, first of all, I don't think Steve Jackson is listening to this. But second of all, it's not going to hurt the sales of zombie dice by us saying it's better than zombie dice. But yeah, I really like Monsters of Maiden. I've liked Monsters of Maiden since you first introduced it to us, and I know it's gotten even better with the iterations you've played so far. At least you hope so, right?
I'm not sure it's changed much, but okay.
Well, I mean, you've made a couple tweaks to it, and I've played the latest one that you sent. I mean, I've seen it and played the latest one, and I thought it's even better than the one. Like, for instance, the first one you sent to us really was TC, and you played
it. That was way back when.
Yeah, it was like way back when.
The end of Viva Java. The
exactly. Yeah. That was a while
ago. Well, I know it's better than Lords of Waterdeep.
I want to say happy birthday.
I don't know.
Happy birthday, Fred.
Happy birthday, Fred.
Too late.
Happy late birthday. Should we share that story?
I really miss.
I don't know if we should say that. Oh, okay, we won't share.
I didn't
get
the birthday present Dan said he was going to give me.
Yeah, well, actually, JP from Snakes and Lattes is a professional opera singer, and I asked him to sing "Happy Birthday" to Fred in the game hall, but it never materialized.
Yeah,
we never went to the same place, same time, which would have been pretty cool to see.
That's a shame. So moving on, Adam is. I don't know if we covered anything. Well, okay, let's. You know, this is perfect. Oh, Pay Dirt. Tell us about Pay Dirt.
Pay Dirt was good. It was sort of not even worker placement so much as sort of resource allocation.
Right.
It's basically about mining gold in Alaska. It's about building efficiency engines in terms of equipment and like special care abilities you can buy. It's got an auction mechanic, how you kind of set things up. It's got enough... I think it would have enough variability to keep it interesting based on how the, at the end of each round, there's basically a cold weather sets in, and that's sort of the clock for the game, but the clock could last 15 whole rounds, or I think we calculated it could be done as early as 6.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's quite a bit of variability that could happen just in terms of how the cards come out and how people choose to play. So it was interesting.
I thought thematically that the temperature was cool, because...
Mm-hmm.
It made sense that, like, you know, there's always going to be a variable time that the game can last, but also as the ground gets, you know, colder and colder, it's harder and harder to mine for gold, you know, so I thought that was kind of cool thematically. I thought it was pretty neat, too. It still needs a little bit of, like, graphical help, or at least as far as, like, where your workers are using to move the pay dirt. It's a little bit confusing on how you move the pay dirt, but the rest of the game, it seems really smooth. I love the upgrade abilities you can make, of course, to your equipment.
I talked to Patrick about it, Fred and I did a little bit, and a couple ways that maybe graphically or even slightly rules change that will make it.
But we know, yeah, good. You know, I mean, Daryl's doing a graphic design, so I'm sure it'll improve quite
right.
a bit.
I mean, to be fair, it is still a prototype.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So
I don't think that was a knock the way it looks at all.
No, no. And one thing that I really did like about Pay Dirt, of course, because I love auctions, is the fact that it has an auction phase.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that adds something, a little bit of an extra to a slightly Euro feel of a game when you can introduce an auction system when you're playing against the other player. So it has that interaction. And then, of course, you get your stuff and you go your own separate ways and figure out how much dirt you're going to mine and figure out, you know, all that kind of thing. So,
you know what I would really like to see?
What's that?
If you're not done.
No, go ahead.
I'd like to see player powers, variable player powers.
I would agree with that. Well, I mean, what game isn't made better by variable player powers? Let's be honest.
Introduce some actual mining companies that each have something.
Yeah. Yep. See, that's what I'm talking about.
I mean, one of the things that I was thinking was maybe a way to get the either the machines or the employees, I can't remember, the crew and things.
Yeah.
A way to get them outside of the auction, because there's just some people that just can't do auctions at all or just, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, if there was a way, even if it was more expensive.
Yeah, and a backup if they can't get
right.
something. Yeah.
But I don't think Patrick was real keen to that. But I was just telling, this is what I would like. But variable player powers, I think, might be the best thing that could happen to that game.
I would agree. And it doesn't even have to be in the base game. I mean, you just introduce it. Well, we're doing meta here now. The Dice Hate Me Games version of Pay Dirt. You flip the tableau over, and now all of a sudden you got variable player powers. Hey, look how that works out.
And don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not one of those people.
Maybe.
Oh, maybe like Eclipse?
Eclipse, that was one of those great games from the last few years.
Maybe. We'll see. Yeah.
Listen, I don't want to sound like one of those people that says, like, everything I play, it should be changed. But, I mean, it did feel like there was something that I liked it, I just didn't love it.
Right.
I mean, it's not a game that I don't care what the price point is. I want it. It's a game that if the price is right, I'll buy it. But if it make it a little more fun,
mm-hmm.
it was fun, but...
Well, so on the flip side of that coin, the game we played before Pay Dirt is Fantasy Frontier by Gamelink Games.
Michael Coe.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you absolutely loved it. Now, we can jump across the table, but tell me why you loved Fantasy Frontier.
I kind of like the whole, it's got this, part of the game is you're in Zeppelins, and part of the game is there's a spatial recognition, and you have to forgive me if I use the wrong word, spatial recognition of... You're putting terrain out, and you have these cards that if there's a certain combination of terrain or pattern, I guess is probably better,
yeah,
pattern of terrain, if there's a certain pattern of terrain, you would score points if you flew over it or stopped on there. And part of the game is the growing of the terrain, or almost like maybe exploration of the terrain
mm-hmm.
as you're pulling tiles out of a bag and you're kind of setting it up. And I kind of really liked figuring out where I could put things down so that nobody was going to mess with them or nobody was going to mess with me, because there is combat in the game. It's very, we did it minor, but there's combat in the game, and everyone has player powers, which was pretty cool.
That's true.
So I was able to use my player power along with the ability to put the terrain down and a special power I got to really maximize that, and that's how I won. It just felt fun. I know it's not going to be for everyone. You said spatial things, and you can explain that,
yeah.
But it was pretty cool.
Yeah, that.
And I like the worker part of it.
That was the thing, because when I saw pictures posted on Twitter of like a contest to see, can you see these spatial spots?
Yes. And that was a really smart thing that Michael did.
Yeah, well, it's cool. It's just the fact that when I see that, I go, wait a second, couldn't that just randomly happen? And we were talking about that then later, like how, you have to visit this spot or you have to do that. And that's why I was interested in playing it, because I was like, that just seems like something that I wouldn't like, because it would just be a random happenstance. Oh, sweet, I completed 5 missions just by drawing them by happenstance.
It happens that way sometimes, but it's no different, honestly, than in Ticket to Ride, where you may draw a ticket that is you're lucky enough that, oh, I've already completed that
but
route.
But do you feel like, because in Ticket to Ride, you've already built your network. Do you feel like you had enough control over the terrain that was the case?
I personally do. I don't feel like that I was as efficient in controlling the terrain as Dan was. And Dan had the best thing, because there's one thing you can do is you can move your Zeppelin over, then you can spin your... And it's a worker placement, too, so you're trying to manage the dudes who are in the Zeppelin. One of the things you can do is you can spend 3 guys, and it's a lot of guys, to blast ground. And what that means is change the tile, the type of tile that's underneath you. I was doing that to complete my terrain. So I was.
Did you
I was
change it to whatever you wanted, or did you have to have it in front of you?
You had to have it in front of you.
Okay.
So you could change it to one of the tiles that you had already drawn during the explore phase or scout phase. So you could change out that tile, but it took three workers, so it meant you were not doing, you weren't using it for research or scouting to get new cards or new tiles or blast somebody or move, you know, all these different things, or explore the terrain beneath you, getting resources that you needed. So I wasn't really building resources, which are used to build, you know, cities, which gives you a lot of points, which is what Adam was doing in the game. I mean, he was focusing on trying to build all the cities, and he built all three of his cities because he's really good at collecting resources and resource management.
And that was his power, too.
That was also his power as well.
Each player power kind of directed itself to a specific strategy.
True. Although I didn't...
Everybody used it perfectly, I think.
I guess I did kind of use it a little bit good because I used it socially. My player power was the fact that it was harder for people to hit me in combat. You know, I probably should have gone out blasting people more than I did, but I used it more, again, like in Twilight Imperium, as a deterrent. So, like, who else was playing with us?
Panda.
Oh, Chris Matthew from Panda. Yeah, he went out and was, like, using combat a lot. And so he was actually splitting his fire between me and Dan. Mm-hmm. And I was convincing him that it was better to shoot Dan because it's easier to hit him because it was a deterrent because it's harder to hit me. Which worked to my advantage.
And
so
if
the
dice didn't hate him as much as they did, it might have been a different game, too.
Seriously. Well, he rolled really poorly on a lot of that stuff. He allocated a ton to combat. But it's got a lot of interesting choices in it. But, again, going back to where TC was saying, and I've mentioned before, the spatial recognition and the spatial patterns that you see in the game is not going to be for everybody. It's not something that I'm really good at. I can do it, but it doesn't speak to my playing ability. Same thing with Adam, like, I mean, you can speak to that. I mean,
I think both of us had a big problem with mirror images.
Yes, like absolutely.
You could see, okay, I need these four tiles in this arrangement, and we would see, okay, there it is. Oh, if you flip the card, it's mirror image, and that doesn't
happen. It was like spatial dyslexia. Yeah. It was weird.
And I want to say what TC was saying about, like, or what you guys said about Ticket to Ride. The reason why I think it's even more rare than Ticket to Ride, because Ticket to Ride will have, like, Miami to Raleigh and Miami to New York, and they would overlap.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but I didn't see those cards as overlapping. It was
No, you're right. You know it was more. It was more rare to pick up one and be like, "Oh, well, there it is." It'd be more common to say like, "Oh, well, there it is," but I just need to add one tile,
right?
You know, and that's gives you a slight advantage. But then there may be one you pick up and you're like, "Oh, I've got to change like three tiles or lay down three tiles." But anyway,
and I think, like you said, that the reason why it helped me so much is because not only my player power was I got to hold four of those cards, so I would draw, and I also got to scout extra,
right,
which gave me more tiles. So not only did I have a lot to work with, I had a lot to draw, so I would be drawing them. I could basically find any spot on a board, and I could almost create half of the cards I had myself. So that helps.
All right, so Fantasy Frontier, I do feel like that it's a good game. It's an interesting game. Obviously, you know, if you're good with spatial recognition and you like a game that actually where you're creating the world that you're exploring, and resource management, it has a lot of stuff going for it. Resource management, you know, worker placement, movement, world creation, pattern recognition. There's a lot going on in the game, but it's not really cognitive overload. There's a lot of things to think about, but yet it's still manageable. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it launches September 2nd, I think it was. September 2nd on Kickstarter from Game Room Games. And I would recommend people checking it out. Again, if you have a problem with Go, Michael's going to put on the Kickstarter page the little thing, like, you know, the eight patterns that are on there and a sample of board and say, can you spot these on the board? That'll actually help you to understand, like, am I good at figuring out is this going to actually be oriented on the map or not? If you struggle with that a lot, it might not be the game you're looking for. If you're like, oh, this is cool, then go for it. So let's go to the list here. Here. Tiffany, tell us about Swingin' Job Cat Voodoo Lounge.
I was super excited to play that game because it sounds incredible. It looks incredible on the table. I don't know how many people came up to us. You could barely play that game because it looks crazy. You have the little monkeys hanging off of
your martini glass
and there's skulls everywhere. So it's like, I don't even know what you would call it. It's like tile placement, kind of.
It is indefinable, really.
Right, it's like nothing I've ever played, but you have the little clear discs, like bingo chips, and you're building them adjacent to build these. They represent connections between people at a party, and there are four different lounges. and you're trying to place your chips onto the Jive Cats, and that's how you get points. But when you do that, you have to take off chips from two different lounges, which I forget about a lot.
Well, we all did, honestly, but yeah.
And it took me a long time to figure it out. So I would like to play it a few million more times, but I really want to play it again. I kind of went for a longest road strategy that didn't pan out. There's no points for that at the end of the game. Go figure. But it's a lot of fun. I think it's fun, but I need to play it a lot more, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's like, for the most part, the first time you play Swing and Jive Cat, you're just like, your mind is blown. Because there's not really many games like it that exist. And Seth Roback, the guy who designed it, Seth, if you listen to this, I love you to death, but you're out of your freaking mind because this game is insane. And it's been insane since the first time I saw it and played it, and every time I play it, I know it's coming from a special touched mind because there's just so much going on in the game in general. Well, it's true. I mean, what are you laughing about?
No, the special touched.
Special touched? Yes. Oh, yeah, sorry. Is that wrong for me to say?
You just don't hear that every day.
No, you don't. You don't. You really don't. It's
well,
I
do.
Well, you have to wear that badge.
So, anybody else who's played Swing and Jive Cat, what do you feel about it?
I've played it.
Well, I know you have.
I've helped with the playtesting a little bit, not much. Because, yeah, the game blew my mind, and my mind has not recovered. So I cannot figure out that game.
Yeah.
What about you, Adam?
I thought it was really interesting. I did not completely parse it the first go, so I would need to play it again to really get it. My leaning is that it might be a little too chaotic to really be in my wheelhouse, but mm-hmm. It's not something I'm likely to refuse to play either. So,
I think that's a good sign, though.
Yeah. The visual of it is just wow. And that's even before, I guess, they're planning on updating the board even more.
Yeah, the board art's going to be totally revised, but yeah.
If you walk by that table with that thing on there, you're going to stop and look.
Yet another game I didn't get to play.
Yeah. Swing. Yeah, sorry, man.
It's my own fault. I'm gonna
beg David to send me the prototype files for that. I'll make my own prototype because I love that game so much that we'll play it.
You just love it. Very tactical games. Like when you can obviously look at the board and then go, okay, I'm going to do 17 different things on my turn with a combo.
And that's what you did.
And where I'm going, all right. Even and even in that game, I know the first time I played, I was just like, I'm like, okay, I think this. Oh yeah, I have a really awesome move. I'm going to do this 1-2. All right. Perfect. Chris goes, and he's like, I'm going to reverse everything you did, and I'm going to put this guy here, and I get 17,000 points, and hit retro, yeah, sweet. So the board can change completely by the time it gets back around to you, or not completely, just all the stuff that you might be strategizing to try to get to could be gone by the time it gets back around to you, so you kind of have to just look at it whenever it gets to you.
Which
always gives me...
Well, and that's
which I like, but it gives me.
I'm not
AP.
Good at that.
That is the point. That is the point. It's and that's the core key is it's a tactical game. It is one of the most tactical games I've ever played. Honestly, in some ways, it reminds me a bit of Magic the Gathering because every time you're playing, you're drawing a new hand or at least drawing some cards. You're trying to figure out tactically what the best move for you is on that. There are some long-term strategies in that, but you can still plan for the long haul with Swing and Jive Cat, but you've got to be able to be flexible in that plan. And I don't know why my brain works the way it does when playing Swing and Jive Cat, but I can look at. I feel like when I'm playing a usual long tail Euro with Adam, I'll watch him and he's got that look in his eye like, here's Rain Man, beautiful mind. There's stuff coming off. You know, there's like. colors and numbers flying off the board, and he's planned 18 moves ahead.
I'm bending spoons while you guys take
You are. Exactly, exactly. Well, this game makes me feel like that. Like, I can look on my turn, and, like, I see all these possibilities, you know, and I'm like, boom, and I do it. And I know that after I do it, and it's already, you know, being planned out, and it's tactical, and I make it happen, now I've made that happen, I can move on to the next step. I don't have to worry about 18 steps ahead. So anyway,
yeah. Do you think that our next field trip is going to be to, where is it, France or Spain, so we can go make sure this guy gets the art done so we can get this game?
Oh, Sergey. Sergey. Yeah, I don't know. He needs. We're going to have to talk to David about this. So anyway, we'll move on because everybody knows that I have a geekgasm about Swingin' Jackpot Voodoo Lounge.
But there's definitely, like you always say, there are certain games that when people stop every time you play them and are just so interested and would probably buy the game just because of what they saw you do.
It's crazy. It really happens with a lot of games, and it's games that are unique. You know what I mean? Like we mentioned, Brewcrafters, when they see that, you know, when they see Compounded, they see Viva Java. I mean, people come by and they see, like, the eight people sitting at a demo table playing, and there's all this stuff all over the table. They look, and they go, like, oh, what is going on here?
It's like, they're like, this must be the hardest game ever, or what are they doing? And then they're just, and then somebody stands up and high fives, and you're like, what just happened?
Yeah, they're seeing people, you know, digging things out of a bag, and they go, yeah, bam! You know, it's like,
They're playing a party game, but it just has all these, like, you're like, yeah, so I can understand why people might get that weird impression from that game, because it's like, you can't, like you were saying, you can't parse things. It doesn't make sense when you're watching.
Right.
But when someone starts explaining to you, you're like, oh, okay, well, that makes perfect sense. It's all some sort of weird system that has this atmosphere.
Yeah. And that's honestly those types of games that I'm drawn to. Well, obviously, I've signed a lot of them, so for Dice Haven Games. But speaking of games that makes you stop and go, what? Maximum Throwdown. When people are watching somebody play Maximum Throwdown, they're like, what is going on? Because you're all standing around a table, you're tossing cards on the table, and normally that has no rhyme or reason, but in Maximum Throwdown, there are a lot of little symbols on the cards that enable you to, if it comes around to your turn and the symbols are still uncovered, you get certain abilities, and you also can score points based on, you know, symbols and things that are on the cards. Now,
You can score points.
TC does not choose to.
I choose to not
score points. TC chooses not to score points at all.
He needs love, not points.
So I will mention that probably the most chaotic and insane event of Gen Con 2013 for this group was our drunken Maximum Throwdown challenge.
It was like 5 o'clock in the morning, Maximum Throwdown.
I don't remember how late it was, but Dan was probably the most sober of all of us. And so
I really don't think I was.
Well, but you were the ringleader. You were the cat wrangler at that point.
You know, you play certain games, and that's a game where somebody kind of needs to be the... What do you call it? You see the master brewer?
The brewmaster.
Somebody needs to be the maximum thrower. You know, you need to say, all right, so TC's up. All right, TC, you get this turn. All right, Adam, you're up. True. You get this. It just makes it flow a little easier, I think, when you do that. And then people are moving around the room, are doing this, throwing this, and we're just laughing at each other, making fun of each other's throws. It was fun. I actually really had a great time playing it. Even hurting the cats was fun.
I didn't know if you were having fun or not, because you were just like, come on, guys. I mean, I heard that about 80,000 times.
Stay on target.
Stay on target.
All right, I want to throw a card, right?
Yeah, do you want to throw a card?
One with his offhand, it seemed like, because everything you would throw would just go like the other way.
He's got a hook.
I remember I had a very memorable shot. It was a card that was maybe 3 inches away, and we're playing on the cot, so I throw it, and I drop it, you know, lightly, just like, ooh, it's going like 2 inches away, and it just goes, slide, hits the airstream, and it goes, woo, right across the cot, the other side. I'm like, okay, well, your turn.
There was one point during the game that TC had no cards that were uncovered. Like, there was no symbols whatsoever.
It wasn't early. It was late, because there was about 14,000 cards on there, and there's no yellow cards.
No yellow whatsoever.
It's almost like you were trying not to have any cards going. Like, you would have to try to not have that.
But did anybody get to a point in that game where they were just like, I really don't care if this is over now or not?
No.
I did, and the reason is because I was being accused of metagaming. It's a game where we're all hammered, and we're throwing cards onto the floor, and I got yelled at for having too many powers out. Like, I just game the system, this guy's an asshole.
we were throwing
a card, and somebody else can go.
We were throwing it onto a cot, which was actually kind of fun. I mean, you could play it anywhere.
Yeah, you can play it anywhere. You can use the floor, you can use the table. As long as you have a defined area you can play in. And honestly, like, even the cot, like, I had a little bit of a well. We're actually recording this on top of a pool table, which, had we known it existed at the time we played the game, would be perfect to play Maximum Throwdown on, because it has some bumpers and keeps the card in place. But overall, I mean, it's a blast to play. You can't take it too seriously. I mean, you just can't.
Every time I play that game, I'm like, how did no one think of this beforehand?
I know.
Such an elegant design.
Well, from the minds of Jason Tagmeyer.
You know what surprised me a lot about the con is that I expected to be more people in Hall D with tables together playing it.
Because
it's such a good game. Why weren't there more
people? I didn't see many people playing it.
You would think, like, late night people would be around, but maybe that's the thing. Maybe it wasn't a con thing to do, because...
Maybe they did it when they went back to their hotel, playing it there. That does make a lot of sense, because most people are like, you know, they're using the tables to set up these big elaborate games and things. So,
and AEG gave away a bunch of copies of it on Friday.
Yeah, Friday night at the AEG thing. Every single swag box had a copy of Maximum Throwdown in it. So,
I'm really happy to get one. I was real happy to get it.
Yeah, I was happy to get my second copy. But no, I'd already bought one. That's the only thing. I really had a good time at the AEG night. I really did. And it was totally packed. And that's when we got to play a lot of trains and everything like that. But I will say the one drawback about the AEG night is the fact that you don't know what's coming in the swag box. And so I went to the AEG booth the first day to make sure that I bought Maximum Throwdown, the Cthulhu set, and trains, because, you know, you never know if they're going to sell out of something and you really want it. Well, then, you know, I go on AEG night, and I've got the Cthulhu Smash-Up expansion and Maximum Throwdown in the box. And I'm like, I've already paid for it. So I have two now. It's not a huge deal. I mean, I'm going to donate.
Because I did not get that Cthulhu expansion. I wanted so bad.
And see, I gave, I promised Daryl he could have the Cthulhu expansion because he'd helped doing a lot of demos for Compounded. So I gave him my second one. And I'll donate the extra copy of Maximum Throwdown to the Gamers for Cures things in November. So it's not a huge deal. It's not like I spent a bajillion dollars and they, you know, gave me multiples or everything. But it's kind of like, you know...
There's also eBay.
There is, but I almost feel like it would be... I don't know how you do this, because even if AEG had it on Thursday night, say, most people might wait a day before, you know, wait till Friday to buy something. It's kind of a difficult thing. I know they throw it because they want people to play the games and, of course, for helping the AEG brand. And they do a great job of that. But at the same time, they're also trying to promote showing the games being played so they can sell more at the con. And I don't know that it... fully 100% works that way. But I am glad that it happens.
I think that might have been my favorite. I mean, other than all of us hanging out and stuff, that was probably one of my favorite things we did at the con was AEG night.
I would agree. And the fact that we actually got to sit down and somebody teaches trains, we played, you know, a bunch of trains, and it was a lot of fun.
Well, since we're talking about the experience this time, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, my experience was of that night was really fun, but in a completely different way, because that night was like, triple scheduled, probably 6 or 7 things I wanted to do at the same time. But my experience, I'll give you the game designer experience, game designer experience.
Did somebody buy you coffee?
Oh yes.
No, no one bought me coffee. What is up with that? Like, no one, everyone.
Yeah, I don't get
one
that.
It doesn't matter. But anyway. So while they were going to the AEG night, I went off with Ben Rossett and some of the other game designers, Adam and Alex, and we went to, I guess previously, the night before, I didn't get to sign up for this, but Minion Games, the James Math from Minion Games had set up a nice, like, awesome opportunity for game designers. It was a speed dating at Gen Con. So this is the setup. You would stand there. You'd have a table. They'd be like, you get that table, you get that table. And they had, they had 10 different tables. And the game designers would set up their game as fast as they could. And then they'd be like, go. And these publishers or representatives from 10 different major publishers came in the room. And they would walk up to you and be like, all right, what do you got? and it, you would show your game, and you would give them a 6-minute pitch, and then they would leave and go to the next table, and you'd get a new person coming in. So you got to pitch to 10 like major publishers, including Minion, including like Z-Man and Tasty Minstrel, and I think
had I known about it, I would have gone to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I mean, it was a good thing.
Had it been on a different night,
right? that's true. A different night.
But that was awesome because that just for game designers in general, it's an awesome service. So these guys are having this fun time, and I completely missed out on that. So, but I went to the game designer meeting, which was a schedule conflict with the AEG thing. So. Mm-hmm. And that was an awesome opportunity, too, because you got to meet a lot of game designers who were doing the exact same thing. A lot of them had come from the speed dating designer thing. And, again, James Math from Minion Games has set this thing up again. So we're all going around shaking hands, talking to people. But just for me, Gen Con and just any of these conventions is an awesome networking opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
Not just for,
it's huge.
Yeah, but just not for just, like... it's not like I walk up to a publisher and I say, it's like, can you take 5 minutes of your time and show me things? That's not the thing that I'm really looking for. It's the fact that I get to connect with these other game designers. They're all in the same kind of boat, and you really meet a lot of cool people. Obviously, I got the pitch stuff too. Just it being, designing things, you want to pitch games. So I got to pitch to. Some awesome publishers, but at the same time, it's like you really get a chance to meet all the cool people in game design, and they're not a lot of them aren't weirdos. Some of them are, but a lot of them aren't.
Some of them are adorable.
Yeah, some of them are adorable Frenchmen from Quebec that I feel so bad because we kept trying to do a Viva Java dice demo for them, and just.
It didn't happen. Yeah.
But they had an awesome game about like real time creating plates with like these cubes. I can't remember the name of
it. Oh, it starts with an E. But they had these big like poker chips that were plates, and you're putting these cube ingredients on it.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
But that was after you did your worker placement thing to get all your resources, and which were food and recipes and stuff. So you had this Euro section.
And then you real time, sit in your restaurant,
11 seconds, go, see, put, make That's plates, put cubes on plates, and put them out.
Pretty awesome, actually.
So, it just seemed like it would be, really fun to play. So,
Well, going back when you're talking about this meet and greet, and again, this is part of the Gen Con experience that many people don't, get into because this is the publishing / design side of it, but Ben Rossett went to the meet and greet thing,
mm-hmm.
and he was telling me today, he's got 3 games now that people want to sign, or at least interested in talking about signing.
Yeah, and
I'm like, that's awesome. I mean, just to see that kind of networking and connection for him, and he was like, he was really happy. He's like, this has been a really good con for me. So I'm happy for him, and some designs that I've looked at, and I know that he's been working on trying to get in front of people, and that was a really great resource for him to do that. So
yeah.
Were any of those. Any of those publishers pretty grumpy after working an 8-hour day and then coming to see you guys?
I got to talk to a lot of the representatives or something that were there from the day before, and Seth Jaffe was one of them from Tasty Minstrel, and he was doing all the heavy Euros, and he was saying for him. Like, it was a fun event, but it was almost not worth it because it was so draining. You had to specifically designed to be more work for the publisher than the designer. Like, they were running around, but just the fact that you had to get this information, and then at the end of it, you were like, as a company, I can only look at maybe 3 or 4 of these out of the entire 40 I looked at, and people are just talking words at you by the end, and it just.
I'm sure it's got a lot of bit overload, but at the same time, I think it's still a really, really good resource.
Oh, awesome.
And a great idea.
More and more. So.
Well, and I hope that they schedule it at a time when I can actually do it. For everyone listening out there, if anyone's listening to this podcast that happens to be planning things for Gen Con 2014, How about you schedule something for a Thursday night and try not to do Friday at 8 p.m., which is what everything in the world is scheduled for.
Yeah, exactly. It was actually Thursday.
But I didn't know about it.
But I didn't know about it early enough to sign up for it.
But what I'm saying, though, is there were like 18 things planned for Friday at 8 o'clock as well that would have been nice to go to. And it's best because Friday at 8 o'clock is when everybody wants to do it, and you can't do it all. And I don't know what the solution to it is, but come on. Let's get with the program
like
here.
13 different
things. More days, exactly. It needs to be a whole week. Oh, yeah, I would be dead. It's like visiting Vegas. You can't.
Yeah.
Vegas is a 3-day affair. You love it when you first show up. The second day, you hate it. And the third day, you're in love with it again. And it's like
one of those weird things about going to places like Gen Con or Origins. By the time you get to Sunday, you're like, what the hell did I do Thursday night? I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember. It's such a blur, yeah. I mean, we've been here since Wednesday, and honestly, it's all – I'm trying to – even thinking back on the games that I played, sometimes I have to think about who was in that game, you know, because we've rotated and played so many different ones. I think we've covered most of the things that on the list. There may be a couple that we'll probably revisit. There is one game that I'm only going to hint toward. I'm not going to even mention the name of it, but it is by Matt Riddle and Ben Pinchback. We'll see how it goes, but I played it while you guys were playing Monsters and Maidens at the bar. I was playing this game at the bar, and it is awesome. So, more on that later. We'll see how that goes.
We also played Katarski's Frog Flip at the bar, which none of us had any remote flipping skills whatsoever.
No, we were all terrible.
Fred
and Craig were awesome. Just like they were creating advanced frog flip, they made frog spin, which I think they're gonna post as a official variant, or not official but unofficial variant of frog flip, where you spin the frog and it lands on the lily pads. But their version, it was actually pretty cool the way they were doing it. But the fact that they were just like, all right, maximum frog flip. there's this stack of special ability cards that just gets like, it's like 10 feet tall and you just start playing.
Well, we had to do something because we were completely inept at playing it the correct way.
Yeah, like 30 minute frog flip.
Well, I would like to mention a couple of like, just off to the side really quick, I played Rite of Passage by Matt Loomis. He wanted to show me it just to get almost feedback. And also pitch as far as design-wise concerned. A lot of fun. Hard for me to describe exactly the gameplay itself, but it has some bluffing, some economic and marketability in it. I'll describe more about it later because, honestly, I feel like he's really going to find a publisher because it's rock solid. It's a lot of fun. On top of that, we mentioned Jason. Jason was here with his wife, Lisa, and we had a great time hanging out with them. And he also showed me Clippers, which is one of his simple kind of trick-taking games, which was a lot of fun. You'll be hearing a lot more about that in the future as well. It's about a barbershop, turn of the century. We're going to have to work on those shady ladies, but we'll call them something different. But anyway, is there anything that I've missed that you guys wanted to mention as far as like your Gen Con experience before we sign off? Nothing? Everybody's in a blank?
No, I'll just mention it. I'll probably mention much more in Geek All Stars the next episode, but I want to. A lot of the publishers are really cool about donating to the 24-hour board game marathon for Turner Syndrome Society for Gamers for Cures. So, thanks to all of them, and especially Plaid Hat and AEG were really cool, and Minion James gave me a few games. So, and we'll go into that more now. But I had a blast this week. I love, even though we had a ton of people in our room, that was half the fun. You know, I really like that.
Well, especially
thanks for hanging out with us.
That's
the thing.
No, it's
cool.
It's
a
couple stories.
We have people in a circle now. I mean, you hung out with us so much at Origins, and hey, having you with us was cool. And TC, everybody.
And that's the thing. I think
Craig,
Gen Con and Origins, they're about the people. It's not about the games. Absolutely. It's not about the new office. It's not about the vendor hall. It's about the people.
Yep.
Meeting new people, making new friends.
And hanging out with people, like Chris Kopak. He's fantastic. Just being a
guy.
I feel bad because now it's like the name drops.
Oh, the name drops. Oh, yeah, you're right. I shouldn't have started.
I'm like, all right, let me list every single game designer I met at this place.
Oh,
Wait till our show to I'll do the name dropping on our show. I always feel bad doing it, but I love doing it. It's fun because I love doing it because it's so much fun to people that you meet.
Well, you start naming them off. Ken Grazier, Sam. You know, it's like you start naming a whole bunch of people. Matt and Ben, of course.
Things.
Joel. Lance. Yeah.
Sorry, I'll stop.
Even Tom Vassell. Yeah, we hung out with him a little bit. We had the Dice Tower.
We met Richard Launius.
And we cannot forget Richard Launius because...
I'm going to fall out of my chair.
There you go.
The fantastic Richard Launius.
Yes, fantastic Richard Launius. No, Richard.
I almost met him.
You've almost met him. I'm sorry, Fred. I can't believe it. I was just...
We got to hang out with Fred.
We got to hang out with Fred.
Fred McKenzie.
Oh my gosh.
Take an awkward picture with him like I did. He has his arm around me, but he's looking off somewhere like, what is going on with this lady? I'm so jazzed to meet him. Such a cool guy.
And Alex and Adam MacIver.
Adam was great. Adam taught us Perium. Yeah. And of course, Brian Fisher and John Sizemore. just keep reading names off when you see the background.
Is that his last name?
Huh?
Brian
Fisher?
No, the other Brian, a real nice guy.
Brian Fromm.
Brian Fromm.
No, Fromm was very cool.
Brian Fromm was great.
The other Brian with the
this is like the end of Whose Line Is It Anyway? Yeah. It's like we're reading a prompter and every now and then the words
start like this. He puts on 30 different Chris's.
Oh, Brian Lentz.
I said Lentz. Did I say that?
Lentz.
10 different Johns.
Lentz.
There's
Lentz.
A few Davids out there.
And Mark Spector, of course.
And we can't forget Patrick Nicol.
Patrick Nicol, of course.
Can anybody forget Patrick Nicol?
This is not name dropping working out.
Not very well. So, if you're listening to this podcast, we've not mentioned your name. It's because it was my fault and I started it, and we love every single one of you because we would not be playing games or hanging with you if we did not like you. We would avoid you like the plague.
That's right.
Let's start with those people.
Wait, he didn't talk to me. That must be the plague.
Oh, yeah, whatever. Okay, yeah, all right. If I didn't see you at the con, it's because we didn't run into each other. Anyway. No, it's been a fantastic time. You're right. You're absolutely right. You come here for your connections. You come here, fantastic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can I say this too? You,
sure.
I actually went to that panel, and I know you want to wrap it up, but that was a real cool panel. I have no real design skills or aspirations. Everybody wants to design a game, and I'd love to, but anyway, that has nothing to do with it. You went to the pitch.
The Art of the Pitch.
The Art of the Pitch, and had you, Launius, Yarrington. Here we go, more names.
Yeah.
And
Phil Reed.
And Phil Reed. That was really cool to listen to. I mean, it was cool. I mean... it's not name dropping when you're watching a panel.
Though. Yeah, okay.
I went as somewhere I was watching. I wasn't like I was hanging out with.
It was cool to listen to Phil talk because he had a lot of insight on the whole Steve Jackson thing, and I thought the way Zombie Dice was handled was really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's been repackaged a few times now as different things and has sold like crazy outside of its intended market, and I think that's really awesome.
Allowed to talk to Richard Launius, I might as well watch him talk.
There were a lot of interesting tangents that came out of that panel. It wasn't all just about here's how you pitch. It actually delved into some of the more meta elements of game production and marketing, branding, and stuff like that, which was really fun to talk with those guys on the panel about it. And I'd love to do it again. I wish we had a decent turnout. I wish it would have been a little bigger, but again, the scheduling was rough. 6 o'clock on a Friday, and it's one of those things where people are going to eat. And Doug, who was the moderator and the one who put the panel together, wished it could have been another time. It was really a long time he could have done it. So, yeah, it was great. And of course, it's always good to.
It wasn't great. It was.
It was fantastic. And I got a chance to talk to Phil Reed about Car Wars, which is always great. And he probably gets tired of me talking about Car Wars every time I talk to him. And, of course, hanging with Richard Launius is always a blast. So, let's wrap this up. Yeah, let's drop the mic. The only thing that I will plug right now is Friday, August 23rd, as long as I can get the Kickstarter approved. I should have done that before I came to Gen Con. But Belle of the Ball will be launching on Friday morning, August 23rd. We'll be we have a nice little video to go along with it. We'll have some good gameplay description. We should have preliminary rules for people to look at. The art is fantastic. There we go. Fantastic again.
Drink.
The art is fantastic.
It's elegant.
It is elegant. Yes.
Actually, you know what? I would say that I know you're wrapping again.
No, no, it's fine.
Again, I know you're wrapping it up. You know, the thing about elegant, like, I don't really like that word with games, but if there is a game that deserves to be called elegant, it's Belle of the Ball.
Really?
Yeah.
Both art and mechanics.
Yeah.
And mechanics. Yep. Well, I like that. Okay, I'll take that. So, Belle of the Ball. Go, pledge for it. Also, we're rolling the reprints of Great Heartland Hall & Company and Carnival into the campaign, helping us to reprint those games. They are great games. They're all sold out. We're practically sold out of almost every title from Dice Hate Me Games right now. I mean, Viva Java only has a select few left.
What would you say you do here?
Yeah. What? What would you say? Yeah. All right, so we're going to wrap up. Thank you for listening. We've had an awesome time at Gen Con 2013. I hope that every single one of us will be back for Gen Con 2014. Everybody, are you?
Absolutely, yes. Of course.
Absolutely?
Of course, absolutely.
I know, Adam, but we'll get you. We'll get you over
100%
here. 100%
yes.
Oh, yeah, 100% yes. So on behalf of myself, the absent, Daryl Louder, who's Get Louder, I would like to thank everybody for being around the table and hanging out with us. I am, of course, Dice Hate Me. You can find me on Twitter, at Dice Hate Me.
I am Fred McKenzie, at CMG Fred.
Do not look for me, you will not find me.
Except on the Geek All
Stars. On Geek All Stars.
And I am at Puppy Shogun on Twitter.
At Inept Gamer.
At Geek Jock Blog.
Well, thanks for listening, and until next time, may all your rolls be sixes.
I'll never forget you and love you in spite of your faults. The good and the bad, I want to remember it all. When I did a new dance and you did your Tennessee. Party's all over, I came uninvited. I'm leaving and taking the bell of the ball.